Welcome to the stream. I'm Josh Rushing, sitting in for Femi Okeh. The UN is aiming to eradicate modern slavery worldwide by 2030 and child slavery by 2025. But the number of people enduring forced labor and forced marriage, well, it's actually on the rise. That's according to a new report by the UN and anti-slavery NGO. So today we ask, what action is needed to stamp out modern slavery? Joining us to discuss from New York, we have Grace Forrest. She's the founding director of Walk Free, the NGO that worked with the UN on the new report. Also in New York at the moment is Sophie Otiende. She is the founder of Azadi, an organization that supports survivors of trafficking. She's also the CEO at the Global Fund to End Modern Slavery. And we have in Toronto, Matt Friedman, who's the founder and CEO of the Mekong Club, an organization working to combat slavery within the private sector. One more seat at the table, and that's you. You that are watching on YouTube, see the box over there? We have a live producer waiting to get your comments to me so I can get them to our guests. So help me out. Be a part of this show. I'll check YouTube here in a minute. We'll get some of your questions in, okay? In the meantime, let's begin with Grace. Grace, tell us about the report. What were you expecting? What were you surprised by?
Look, I think over the last few years, we've been living through times of really unprecedented crises. And while for many people it was the first time they considered the impact of forced labor in, say, global supply chains, for us, we really saw the COVID-19 pandemic as exposing the vulnerability of our global economy. Seeing a 10 million person increase from our previous report to our current one was very shocking. That's an increase the size of the population of Greece, finding some 28 million people living in forced labor and 22 million people living in forced marriages. The increase in forced labor is driven entirely due to the private economy into global supply chains of the goods we buy and use every single day. Shockingly, children make up some 25% of the overall figure. Women and girls remain disproportionately impacted. And we're now looking down the barrel of 50 million people living in modern slavery on any given day, as well as the world leaders not really doing enough to step up and ending it.
Right. Thank you. I'm curious about the way we define this. Maybe I can bring Matt in here, because what we're talking about is forced labor and forced marriage. I know that a lot of people might think about slavery the way it was 150 years ago, and they think that doesn't exist now. But Matt, can you help us with the definition? What does modern slavery look like?
Modern slavery is basically a situation where a person is tricked and deceived into a scenario where they're taken away from their community and forced to work, and often they don't get paid. The forced marriage side of the equation is basically an individual who is married at a very young age and doesn't consent, or somebody who's forced into a marriage whereby when they get there, it's not kind of a traditional marriage that we would kind of say where there's love and affection and everything else. They're basically brought in the family to kind of support the other family members in that situation. The reason why they put modern next to the word slavery is because the slavery of today is different from the slavery of 150 years ago. There are a whole different set of different types of indicators that are used to measure it through auditing, through supply chains and so forth. And as a result of that, we have kind of to look at this a little bit different than we have in modern slavery or the slavery that we had in years past.
And Sophie, you've come this week from, to the UNGA to talk about this issue. Can you tell me how this is being received there? Is there a surprise there at the... I guess the big jump that this report is kind of the top line of this report is how many more people we're now talking about here.
Yes, definitely the jump is something that people are shocked about. And I think there are two sets of people, right? There's those of us who work with frontline organizations and mm-hmm. are frontline organizations who have always known that the numbers are higher than what can be detected or are currently being detected. And of course, thanks to Walk Free, we are now seeing those numbers identified. But then we have a whole new group, which is essentially not... We are basically introducing this to them. And that's why the whole awareness piece is really important, that there are so many people who we are basically introducing this concept to, and them hearing the number 50 million, they're really shocked, because most people just don't see this issue every day or don't encounter it enough to be able to interact with it in the ways that, you know, would make them confront it.
And,
go ahead, Grace.
Let's go, Grace, Matt, and then I'm going to share a piece of video with you. Grace, go for it.
No, I was just going to share that the other thing that people were shocked by is that modern slavery cuts across geographic, ethnic, religious lines. It is happening in every part of the world. It is happening here in the United States. It literally is something that is a truly global issue with vulnerability that actually sits with over 50% of forced labor cases happening in middle to high income countries. So the misconception that it can happen over there, not that there is any such thing as an over there in a globalized world, is completely false. This is happening in every corner of the globe and is deeply underpinning our global economy.
Yeah, wait, Matt, before I go to you, I want to bring in a couple of voices from our YouTube audience. Mr. Thomas Fritz says slavery is alive and well, even in the USA, which is what you were just saying, Grace. And he makes the point that the U.S. Constitution says no slavery shall exist except for lawful conviction. Well, guess what? Forcing people into plea deals by threats, .. And I interviewed the number two guy in the Alabama prison system and asked him about forced labor and how can you do this? And he explicitly answered because of the 13th Amendment, which most people think of as prohibiting slavery. But he was talking about the second part that actually constitutionally permits slavery in the United States. And I think a lot of people would be surprised that that's actually a thing here. Matt, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I was just going to say, even though the number went from 40 to 50 million, even when 10 years ago we were talking about 21 million and then 35.8 million or whatever, I present to all different audiences, to corporations, to banks, to faith-based groups, to the general public, and everybody's shocked by this. They really just cannot get their head around the fact that we're even using terminology like slavery. And I think the biggest issue that we're facing is just a lack of general awareness. People don't know about the issue. They're not going to care. If they don't care, they're not going to do anything.
Mm. And I want to share a piece of video with you now. This is from a show on Al Jazeera called 101 East. It's an investigative documentary style show that covers Asia. And what I like about this particular clip is if you wonder how people get caught up in this, here's an inside look.
Married with a child and working in the financial securities industry in China, in late 2020, Lu quit his job to learn how to run a business, traveling to Cambodia to help manage a friend's restaurant. But COVID hit, the restaurant closed and Lu was stranded. And that's when a regular customer offered him a job he'd regret accepting. But on arriving at the company, he discovered he'd been sold to a scam syndicate.
Just a couple more voices from our YouTube audience, because I want these guys to keep contributing. This says this channel is from Qatar and covers modern slavery. Aren't you ashamed to be covering this topic? Well, no, we're not. Qatar's had issues with this.
Interesting from Qatar.
Yeah, they're certainly trying to face
Qatar.
That. Yeah. Absolutely. Let's talk about Qatar. And I want to ask you, Grace, one, yes, talk about Qatar. Two, though, I'm wondering, what do you attribute the jump to? Why are the numbers bigger now than 5 years ago?
We have been able to create a comparative estimate to the last one. So unlike other estimates that do exist in the UN system, we are able to unequivocally say that there has been an increase in modern slavery around the world. Just wanted to make that clear in case anyone was wondering if it was due to population size. It is not.
Okay.
We put this down to really the situation of compounding crises that we've been living through for the last number of years, from the COVID-19 pandemic to conflict and crisis situations like distress migration, as well as climate change. We know that the world's most vulnerable people are being hit hardest and fastest, and that mass supply chain disruption has actually led to less safety and less visibility for people in global supply chains. And auditing, like the incredible work that we've heard about from Matt, and things that actually can protect people in supply chains have not been able to happen due to restrictions. Equally, we know that there's massive vulnerability in the migration system, people being trapped overseas. There were, for example, 1 million Sri Lankans trapped overseas at the start of the pandemic, unable to get home, excluded from national health plans, all not being paid. We're talking about massive numbers here. And let me pivot from that into Qatar. Just to be clear, though, this global figure we're talking about is an increase globally. It doesn't have country breakdown, But I would like to talk about Qatar because migrant worker vulnerability is something that is a global narrative for this estimate. Migrant workers are three times more likely to experience forced labour than non-migrant workers, despite the fact they only represent 5% of the global workforce. That was the story we just saw, as you showed on here. Migrant workers, less able to be protected, often having their passports removed, creating further situations of vulnerability, making it harder for people to leave. And, you know, it is good that we talk about Qatar because the FIFA World Cup is happening this year and that stadium has been built using forced labour. Now, Qatar has introduced laws in this time that can protect migrant workers and are now some of the strongest laws within the region. But it's important to note that those laws are there for very, very strong reason and for a very high level of migrant worker vulnerability and modern slavery vulnerability.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I just talk a little bit about the video that you put up there? Oh, sorry, yeah, Sophie, go ahead.
I tell you what, Matt, since you're already going, why don't you take it, and then Sophie will come to you next, okay? Go for it, Matt. Yeah.
So that video is showing a new type of human trafficking that we hadn't had much exposure to. For the last 6 months, about 30% of my time is focused on this. So kind of young, educated people from Taiwan, Hong Kong, China, Malaysia, Singapore are being tricked and deceived into going to Cambodia. When they get there, they think they have a good casino job that's going to pay them $3,000-$4,000 a month. But what happens instead is they're put into these scam centers where for 14 hours they have to sit in front of a computer and basically scam people out of their money. If they don't, they get beaten, they get tortured, they get tasered. And so you have literally hundreds of people in this situation. So to add insult to injury, it's bad enough to be trafficked, but to be trafficked into a situation where you're basically stealing from people from your own country, it's just a terrible, horrible new incarnation of trafficking. And this came out of the COVID situation as well. A lot of the criminals were sitting around, didn't have anything to do. They went online, they realized how easy it was to scam, and then they realized that if they had a lot of victims, they could basically get a lot more money.
Wow. And Sophie, what did you want to add?
No, I just wanted to add on to some of the things that Grace was talking about around migrant workers. And I think this is something that is quite, I would say that a majority of the migrant workers that, you know, Grace is talking about are migrant workers from African countries, from Kenya, from Uganda, from Ghana, who have been abused, both female and male. And one of the things that when we talk about this issue, the reason why we go back to this narrative and awareness is that when we talk about this issue, it's so easy for people to say to not address the root causes of things like migrant work and why migrant workers are vulnerable, and the fact that policies that are actually racist, if we start talking about the root things, policies that are racist. Some of us have passports that when you walk into an airport, it gets stamped and you walk and you can be able to work, you can be able to advocate for yourself. Some of us don't have those sort of passports. It takes us longer. Some of us don't have, you know, the right to be able to speak up, even when you know, the system is really imposing laws that stop you from working. It's unemployment, right? The fact that, you know, vulnerable women are moving and men are moving as a result of vulnerability and lack of employment in countries. And some of the things that people talk about in terms of what should be done is, why are these people not staying in their country? Why are they moving, right? Well, if they know that this is what is going to happen to them, why are they moving? And that's what we need to change, is that people, so long as people cannot be able to take care of their families and their communities, they're coming to the places where they think there's power and there's an ability for them to take care of their families. And we need to address these issues, not just at a surface level, but to also ask why we are comfortable with the fact that, you know, certain people have more rights than other people, especially when it comes to things like migration.
So you make such a strong point about migration and about why they're migrating. I want to share another piece of video with you. This is what happened to some migrants when they came to America. They crossed the border, and then they were shipped by governors from Texas and Florida to different parts of the country, really just to be used as political pawns. Here, check this out.
How do we stop this campaign of using human beings as human cargo and human trafficking by the governor of Texas and the governor of Florida? It's, again, just so... Jesus would be very ashamed of these two governors if he saw how they were treating refugees, since Jesus and his family were refugees once.
It's just to your point, though, that the migrants are the most vulnerable and that it's happening in every part of the world. But, Sophie, I want to come back to you and ask about, are women particularly vulnerable? And if so, how?
I think, again, we go back to the issue of vulnerability. Why are women vulnerable? We all, the issue of gender inequality is not something that is new to us. And I think sometimes when we talk about modern slavery and we talk about it being independent of other issues, we then ask the question, why are some people vulnerable? The reality is that so long as we have in any sort of inequality, therefore, gender inequality in this case makes women more vulnerable as a result of the issues that are there, because women are generally vulnerable. I've spoken about the fact that in countries like where I come from, the fact that women cannot be able to own land means they can't be able to access money. It means that they can't, for example, be able to access investment, to be able to start businesses, to be able to get loans, and to be able to stand by themselves. So, of course, women are proportionally affected as a result of gender inequality. And if we want to then resolve it, we then have to think about the reasons why gender inequality exists. And we have to think about why we need to stamp out gender inequality, because it just makes women and girls more vulnerable. So, yes, and I think the report was quite clear in the fact that gender is an issue, in the sense that you see that women are also trafficked in very, very specific, you know, in a very, very specific stream. So it's also in care work, right? Mm-hmm. The assumption that women are supposed to do certain work means that when they're trafficked specifically in the work that they're predisposed to do as a result of their gender. The same to men, because we see from the report, of course, that construction, when it comes to construction, you have more men than you have women. So, of course, when we're discussing this issue, we cannot address it as a siloed issue. We have to address all the other issues that intersect with it.
We have some more comments from our stream community. I want to first go to YouTube, where Angela Perry has said it's important to continue highlighting and increasing awareness surrounding gender, class, and racial inequalities. Doing so helps shed a light on human rights stripped from vulnerable populations. And we were talking about sex trafficking there. We have a journalist, Elizabeth Salazar, who sent us a video comment from Lima, Peru.
One of the most shocking things I have seen reporting on modern slavery is the strong psychological impact on survivors. I remember a 13-year-old girl who was sexually exploited by her mother's husband in different cities of Peru. And when I talked to her, she felt very uncomfortable being in a shelter. She said she wanted to get out of there, go back to her city, and create her own brothel. This girl believed that sexual exploitation was the only possible future for her.
So, Grace, I think she really talked about the cycle of this and how damaging this can be on the people who feel trapped in it and they can't get out of it. I'm hoping you'll touch on here, why is forced marriage included under slavery?
Yeah, I just want to quickly finish off on Sophie's point, which I agree with so vehemently, that modern slavery should not be treated ever as an issue that happens in isolation. It's an intersectional issue with other global crises, both a driver of global crises and also a symptom of global crises. And I think that just covering off on the rights of the girl, often in times of crisis, it's the first person to lose their rights is the woman or the girl. The first person to go hungry is the woman or the girl. The first person to be considered as an economic burden is a woman or a girl. And this leads us to forced marriage and why it's included in the number. So we define modern slavery as the systematic removal of a person's freedom, where one person is exploited by another for personal or financial gain. And often forced marriages do come with an economic tag, or girls being an economic burden. We are counting a very narrow definition of forced marriage in this estimate. We're counting people who did not consent, regardless of age. But if you counted all child marriages as forced, which are technically the case under international law, this figure would be in its hundreds of millions. So it is about someone being unable to leave or unable to give consent to a situation. And often This is very important to note. There is a strong intersection between forced marriage and forced labor. People who are forced into marriage are exceedingly more vulnerable to other types of forced labor, both within the home, in the care economy, or even within a supply chain. And it's important to note that for this estimate, while women and girls are overrepresented in the figures for commercial sex trafficking and also in forced marriages, that actually a third of our figures find that men and boys are being forced into marriages as well, in some cases to for a family to receive help from a female worker, the boy also losing their rights in the process. So it's like a compounded exploitation.
I want to move the conversation forward to what we can do about it. And we have another video comment from the Stream community. This is from Jessica Turner. She's a spokesperson for Anti-Slavery International.
There are many different forms of modern slavery, including forced marriage, human trafficking, and forced labor. So the signs of slavery might vary by context. However, there are some common things that we can all look out for to help spot the signs of slavery. These might be people who are reluctant to speak to authorities, who seem to be in fear, who are afraid to talk to strangers, have very few personal belongings, and are unable or seem unable to move freely. We urgently need laws around the world so that we can make it not only easier to spot the signs of modern slavery, but to prevent it happening in the first place.
So she's given us some things to look out for there. But Matt, what can be done about this?
Well, it's kind of interesting what you just said. As part of this tour, I always have often women come up to me and say, you know, I was in that airport or I was in that train station or in that bus station, and I saw this situation where it just didn't seem right. The guy was with a girl. She was didn't look like she was a part of the family. It didn't look like they had any kind of chemistry or association. And as a parent, I felt like I really wanted to do something. And so this kind of statement sometimes comes up 5-6 years later. They remember this because they have that gut feeling that something's happening. What is needed is for us to train people on these signs, to help them to understand that there are certain characteristics in a situation that helps us to know that perhaps what we're seeing is inappropriate and it has to be done. And then based on that, to help people to know that there are hotlines, the Polaris hotline, for example, in North America, that allows for people to call in and give information. If you can't if you don't have that particular number, another thing that you can do is to just call 911 or go to and talk to the authorities. This may be the only time that person has the possibility of somebody seeing and interacting because they're out in the public for a period of time. But we really do need to sensitize the general public to the fact that these indicators are there and they tell us that perhaps something bad is happening.
So, Matt, you're talking about awareness and what can happen on an individual level. Grace, will you touch on systemically some of the bigger systems?
Yes.
Are we looking to the UN, to governments, to businesses?
I definitely will. And I just want to add to that comment that often people who are in situations of migrant worker abuse are unable to call the police, and that works in their favor. They're unable to reach out to authorities. So we need to acknowledge that on here. And yes, let's talk about systems change, because the reality is modern slavery, as we said, doesn't happen in isolation to any other of the major global challenges that we face, but it also doesn't happen in isolation to historical slavery. There is a connection to historical slavery and modern slavery, and that connection sits as persisting structural inequality within our global economy. So industries of historical slavery like sugar, tobacco, cotton are all industries of high risk for us today. That's not an accident. Our systems are very much by design. They're not by default, and they are to serve some at the expense of others. So what we need in order to fix this is to understand first and foremost that this is an issue that is 150% man-made and something that takes just political will to fix. Truly, it does. This is a man-made problem. The report is filled with many, many recommendations, a number of which have been informed by survivors. The estimate is built by the experience of survivors. Survivors have the ultimate answers to how to fix these challenges. We have all the answers. We just need political will to do it. So from a forced labor perspective, I'd say my one recommendation is that we need the G20, the world's most powerful nations responsible for 80% of the world's trade, to ensure that there's legislation to protect people at every level of our supply chains. Because if we are building our empires off the exploitation of others while calling ourselves fair nations, it's complete propaganda and unrealistic. We need to ensure that we're not exploiting people in order to serve ourselves good. And Grace, when it comes to forced marriage, we need highly contextualized.
We're wrapping up the show here. What I want to do, though, is I want to tweet out the report later today. That's at Josh Rushing. We'll get the stream to tweet it out as well. I want to thank all my guests for being here. It's such an important issue, and for our audience for participating. Thank you so much.